Good day. This is Marcus Radio. This is Marcus Jarvis. I'm an immigration attorney based in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and Bourne. I'm a partner in the law firm of Marcus Jarvis Law Limited, an international, national, and local business and immigration law firm. Today, I'm going to be speaking on a topic called temporary protected status. Short name is TPS. TPS came about, I believe it was in the early 90s under the then President Clinton, where the United States government gives individuals from certain countries the ability to stay in the USA, live and work for an extended period of time. TPS does not confer benefits like a green card, in other words, lawful permanent resident and ultimately to become a US citizen. However, if you're from a country, it could be a war-torn country, that's the more common. It could be a country of natural disaster, you know, hurricane, flood. For example, I think it was in 2010, January, Haiti had a serious earthquake, and the government, U.S. government said that any Haitian, if you're in the USA, whether you're in removal proceedings or just in the shadows, on or before a particular date, I seem to remember it was January 12th of 2010, that you qualify for what's called temporary protected status. There's an application process. You need to register. I believe it's about $50 for the registration. There's a biometrics component where they capture your fingerprints and your picture, keep it in a database, and then you have to apply for what's called work authorization. The government basically says that you need to register during the initial registration period. They usually give you a number of months, maybe like 6 months, and they may give you the benefit anywhere from 12 months, 18 months. I've seen 24 months, you know, based on some countries. And the U.S. picks and chooses which country it decides to give those benefits. Most recently, I believe it was in November, maybe around the 19th, 20th of 2014, the U.S. government decided to give the countries of Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia what's called TPS. Well, Liberia had TPS before. Actually, they had what's called DED during the Civil War, Deferred Enforcement Departure. They gave them TPS, and then once you registered, the Liberia registration was usually around September, October. Once you registered in 2006, timely registered, you got TPS from 2006 to 2007, and then Liberians went back to what's called DED. And those who qualified, in other words, those who timely renewed, didn't have any crimes, were granted DED. They didn't need a work permit. However, some employers wanted that, so the government allowed them to apply for that. At one time, it was free, and then they want $380 for them to renew. So Liberians who were in the country on or before, let's say the 19th of November 2014, were able to get it. And those Liberians who were here before, let's say they lost it, there was an initial, not a new grant of TPS, so they were able to apply. The reason why Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone received that benefit back in November is because there was an outbreak of Ebola in West Africa and other countries. And so the U.S. government allowed individuals from those three countries who were here before, on or before November, let's say 19th, to apply for what's called temporary protected status. Temporary protected status, as I said before, allows an individual to stay and work in the country. You get a work permit. From a work permit, you can apply for your Social Security card. That's one way to get a Social Security card if you have a work permit. Your Social Security card, your work permit, you can now apply for a driver's license. I know in some states you may not need a work permit to get a driver's license, but in Minnesota, one needs a work permit, Social security card and a driver's license to get a driver's license. The life of the driver's license coincides with the life of the work permit. So you'll see a lot of clients come into you and they say, well, I got a letter from the Department of Motor Vehicles saying that my license is going to be expired in 2 to 3 months. So that's kind of a reminder to them to renew his or her work permit so that they can extend the life of his or her driver's license. In Minnesota, I'm not saying this is so in every state, but in Minnesota, if you applied for your work permit, let's say on a renewal, and you take the receipt to the Department of Motor Vehicles in Minnesota, they extend your driver's license, your ability to drive. I'm not sure how it is in other states. Every state is different. Driver's license control by the state, I believe it would come under the first 10 amendments. Those 10 amendments are designated to the states. I believe those 10 amendments are called the Bill of Rights. So there's an application process. As I said, there are two forms to be completed. And if you have an attorney, there's a third form giving the attorney permission to represent you, get information on you. So it's like a consent form. It's a release. One thing to keep in mind is that TPS is relatively easy to obtain, but also relatively easy to lose it. In other words, if you have multiple misdemeanors, two or more misdemeanors, you could lose the benefit. If you fail to timely renew, you could lose the benefit. The TPS, one might be able to travel out of the United States and return. I caution you that you need to get what's called a travel permit. It's filed on the USCIS form I-131. And you definitely need to have that because that's going to be a visa to get back into the United States. If you leave without a travel permit, you could lose your TPS. You could be denied entry into the United States. So be careful. Some clients, once they receive the receipts to show that they've applied for TPS, they use the receipts to help support a request for a travel document. It seems as if that's kind of discretionary. Some officers may deny it, say that you don't have TPS as yet. So I would caution you and say, well, if you don't want to lose $340, whatever the cost is, you probably should have TPS in hand before you try to get a travel permit to leave the U.S. and hopefully have a safe return. If you have crimes, you probably should not venture out of the USA. There are a number of countries that have TPS today. I wouldn't necessarily go over every country, but I remember not too long ago, Syrians were granted TPS. And TPS is usually granted not only to, let's say, citizens of a particular country, but let's say you have lived in the country for an extended period of time and you got displaced. You can verify that you have lived in that country for a particular period of time, you may be able to get TPS just based on you living in that particular country. I've never had a case, but an example could be, let's say, somebody from Ghana who lived in Liberia for an extended period of time and they got displaced. And they came to the USA and applied for TPS, they probably might get the benefit. Ghana is a relatively safe country, so Ghanaians do not have such benefits as TPS. Sometimes it cannot be avoided. You may have TPS before, and for whatever reason, you lose the benefit. They may say that you didn't timely apply. If you're not in removal proceedings and USCIS denies your application for TPS, the appellate body you'd apply to is what's called the Administrative Appeals Office. This is called the AAO. And there's a filing fee to go up on appeal, and the form that is used is called the I-290B. If you have an attorney, the attorney usually can sign the form, but you'd also have to sign what's called a G-28, the consent form, kind of a release form for you to appeal to the AAO. An appeal at the AAO takes a while. If an individual is in removal proceedings, you know, placed before an immigration judge, and you're from a country that's designated TPS, an immigration judge has what's called original jurisdiction over your TPS. And based on my experience, the judge could allow you, USCIS, to adjudicate, to make a decision on your TPS application, or the judge may decide that the judge is going to take over the application and make a determination on your case. In that case, the judge would grant what's called an individual hearing. The attorney for the respondent, I'm a respondent's attorney, would examine the respondent. The judge could ask questions in between. Then the government's attorney would get an opportunity to do what's called cross-examination. Again, the judge may ask a few questions in between, and then the judge makes a determination whether you're granted TPS or not. I believe most of the issues on when there is an individual hearing for the judge to grant TPS would be centered around the crime one has committed. If the judge decides that he or she will not grant you TPS, the next line of appeal would be to the Board of Immigration Appeal. That appellate body is based in Virginia, and usually attorneys don't appear there to argue cases. It's not impossible, but very rarely you get oral arguments. It's more filing via paper. When you take an appeal to the Board of Immigration Appeal, the board is very, very strict. In other words, if the decision from the immigration judge came out, let's say on the 25th of a month, the board needs to have your appeal by the 24th, on or before the 24th, 30 days later of the next month. And if it arrives on the 25th, 30 days subsequently to the immigration judge's decision, it's not timely and the board will reject your appeal. Let's say you timely file an appeal. An appeal at the Board of Immigration Appeal is as a matter of right. In other words, the board will hear your appeal if you timely file, you pay the appropriate fees, follow, you know, the procedures in the immigration practice manual. The board will hear your case. Let's say the board decides that you won't be granted TPS. I believe your next appeal would be to one of the federal circuit courts in your respective city or state, I should say. States group together to form circuits. In the US, there are about 11 federal circuits. These 11 federal circuits are just below the US Supreme Court. I cannot think of a situation where the US Supreme Court has taken up the issue of TPS. No disrespect, I don't believe that the issue is significant enough for the US Supreme Court to take up the issue. There was a court, I believe it was Blay v. Garmy in the Minnesota district, that basically points us to the fact that beyond the Board of Immigration Appeals, the Eighth Circuit, Minnesota sits in the Eighth Circuit, has appellate jurisdiction over TPS subsequent to the board's review. My law firm did a case back in 2009 where we went up on appeal after the immigration judge denied our client TPS. The immigration judge said that my client did not timely file for TPS, and she felt that she did not have jurisdiction over his case because he did not properly prosecuted his case at the USCIS level. So we decided to take it up on appeal. And the Board of Immigration Appeals, in a published decision, cited as Aldana, Ishmael Lopez Aldana, 25 INDC 49 BIA 2009. The board says that provided you are in removal proceedings and you're from a country that's designated TPS, that the immigration judge has original jurisdiction, not appellate jurisdiction, to renew. But as I said earlier, the judge can decide if they will allow USCIS to adjudicate the application before the judge decides to step in. So that was a pretty good case for the firm, and it has, you know, been cited quite a bit, you know, by other attorneys throughout the country. What's important in this broadcast is that individuals from Sierra Leone, Guinea, and Liberia, and individuals who have resided in these countries for a long time, TPS is now available as of November 19th, 2014. And the initial registration period expires in May of 2015. And I believe that date is roughly May 18, 19, 2015. So it's important for these individuals to be aware that you could be denied TPS if you apply too late. So this broadcast is geared towards, mainly towards those individuals from those countries, because I believe it's an important benefit. As I stated earlier, it will not give you a green card that would put you a path to citizenship, but even the ability to get a work permit for about 18 months and get a social security, get a driver's license, being able to work lawfully is important for a lot of people. I've come across people that would say, you know, Mr. Marcus, just get me the ability to work so I can send money for my family abroad. If I could just have that, I'd be very happy. So it's important for individuals from these countries to be aware of that. In these situations, sometimes you might be able to apply for what's called a fee waiver, you know, their fees. I think to initially apply for TPS, it's about $515. There's a check for $50, there's a check for $85, and there's a check for $380. The USCIS website has a lot of information, so check it out, uscis.gov. And one thing I need to emphasize is that when you come to the USA, you need to try to save your documents, no matter how significant it appears to be. A lot of people have this habit: as soon as they have a receipt, they throw it away, etc. But sometimes you never know how a document that seems insignificant, how helpful it may be, because everything is about establishing presence, lawful presence in the USA to help you get a benefit, I should say. I've seen a lot of individuals, you know, as immigrants, commit crimes. So I decided to author a book called A Simple Guide to the Immigration Laws of the United States. And in my book, I talk about securing your documents. You know, sometimes you may travel from your country and you may lose your, what's called the I-94, lose your passport. And it makes it very, very difficult for you to adjust status. Let's say you found love in the U.S. and you can't prove that you made a lawful entry. You may not be able to adjust status in the USA. You're going to have to travel back to your country to do what's called consular processing. And sometimes individuals don't want to go because of the risk of being kept out by customs and border protection when he or she tries to re-enter. So care for your documents. In my book, I talked about when you get a visa in your country, you probably make copies of the picture page of your passport, copy of the picture page of the visa. Sometimes when you come as a student, you may have the I-94 ready in the packet and also what's called the I-20. Make copies of those and leave them in your country. When you come to the U.S., you get a safe deposit box and make copies. Maybe you should keep your original documents in your safe deposit box and have copies just in case you're challenged by law enforcement. But it's important for you to care for your documents so that if you're trying to get a benefit, it's just easier for you to prove your case. Keep in mind that the individual who is applying for a benefit has the burden of proof. You know, it's not feasible for the U.S. government to try to go out and get every document to help you prove your case. They probably would have to charge you too much. They would have to get additional workers to do that. However, if they're trying to remove you from this country, they'll spend the money. They'll, you know, contact consulates abroad, have people go and search your local acts, people in your neighborhood about you, etc. So they'll do that. I hope this broadcast is helpful. Please get my book. You can buy a copy at a-tbooks.com, or you can get it on Amazon. Just put in my name, Marcus Jarvis, and you should be able to find a place to buy the book. The book is available in 6 languages as an ebook application. The book is also available in Spanish and in English as print book. Marcus Jarvis, immigration attorney and author, located at 3621 85th Avenue North, Suite 201, Brooklyn Park, Minnesota, 55443. You may reach us at 763-425-5447. You may find us on the web at a-tbooks.com or m-jlawlimited.com.